Everything in life has a more sinister and darker side than what is perceived on the surface. Every piece of media you consume has something lurking in the shadows of the person or team who made it. Every movie, every song, every book that you've enjoyed all has a dark past in some form. But out of all of those, it seems video games have the capability to house some of the most dark and twisted parts of the creator's mind. From obvious inclusions like Silent Hill's PT to the most lighthearted games such as Mario, we will pluck every strand of every creepy and twisted mystery these games have to offer. This is The Dark Side of Gaming. These days, when you boot up a game, you can expect to see beautiful, sprawling landscapes with lifelike character models. You can see indie titles like Cuphead, lovingly drawn frame by frame with retro cartoon aesthetics. You can see wonderful pixel art bringing to life alien worlds inhabited by stranger beings. It seems like every other day, you can go onto YouTube and find another new trailer for another new AAA game set to release a year down the line. But it took the industry a long time to get there, and we've come a long way. Even a decade ago, you could walk down to your local Blockbuster and get your hands on the newest releases. Before games were able to be downloaded from a digital storefront, before they were stored in CDs, even before they came in clunky cartridges that you could shove into even clunkier machines, they came on floppy disks. Unflattering gray or black squares with white labels depicting the game and its logo. If you were someone who developed their own game on one of these floppy disks, you'd likely just scrawl the name of the game in Sharpie. You'd have to meet people in person to show them your game. This supposedly led to people meeting in groups and swapping around these various floppy disks. This would be a cheap and social way for people to trade games they had finished for something new. Classic games like King's Quest and Beyond Castle Wolfenstein would find new owners excited to explore. These meetings would also be one of the best means for indie developers to get their creations in circulation. Smaller teams developing a game could load it onto a floppy disk and head over to one of these meetings. Who could argue with trying out a free new game? Someone would take the obscure title, play it, and if it was fun enough, pass it on to the next. Hopefully your game would have had what it took to circulate until it met the right person, someone who could push it to market. Many games would serve to live and die by this method. This soft whisper of passing programs displayed on ancient computer screens. It shouldn't be surprising that, given this haphazard marketing, that a number of games would simply fall through the cracks, passed on to someone who didn't appreciate the game and then didn't pass it on. There could be dozens upon dozens of old, discarded floppy disks harboring long storylines and gameplay mechanics, most of which are doomed to never see the light of day. One of these games that fell to the wayside was titled Pale Luna. It's a game that failed to ever garner circulation outside of the San Francisco Bay Area where it originated. Any attempts to find copies of the game will lead to dead ends as no floppy remains, nor are there any computers running that once housed the game. All that's left of the game is a recounting of what the game had to offer, as strange as it might be. When the player was to insert the floppy disk, there would be no logos or menu screen. Instead, their computer screen would become shrouded in darkness, save for a few lines of text that would set the scene for the player. You are in a dark room. Moonlight shines through the window. There is gold in the corner, along with a shovel and a rope. There is a door to the east. This haunting and lonely description of a room leaves much to the imagination. Once the player sits with it for a moment, the game requests that the player enter a command. With this screen alone, it starts to become quickly apparent why the game might have failed to make any sizable impact, why it was discarded by those who attempted to play it. The game was described as enigmatic, nonsensical, and completely unplayable by a writer for a no longer functioning fanzine. It was touted as such because the game was very limited with what the players could do within it, and as such, involved much trial and error. Though the actions needed could be obvious at times, it would leave much to be desired in terms of exploration and creativity. As with the initial screen, the player only had a few options with what they could do. In order to advance, the player would need to enter the correct commands. Pick up gold. Pick up shovel. Pick up rope. After obtaining all the items the room had listed inside the room, the player would then enter the commands, open door, go east. The player could not explore the room any further. No cabinets to open, no beds to lay in. It created the image of a completely empty room, aside from what the player was pointed towards. Things would only grow more vague and unstable as the player made their way outside of the isolated hut. When leaving the house, they would be presented with another screen that read, "Reap your reward. Pale Luna smiles at you. You are in a forest. There are no paths to the north, west, and east." Reap your reward seems to be the main objective, but it's unknown as to who or what Pale Luna refers to other than being the namesake of the game. Though it is alarming that Pale Luna smiles at you is completely capitalized, as if it's something within the game watching you that the player needs to be aware of. Like the last screen, the game requests a command from the player. It's here that the true issues with the game begin to shine. It can be frustrating in a game when you're forced to figure out how to proceed through trial and error. Games like Dark Souls, and even an entire genre known as roguelites, thrive on this concept for their core gameplay loops. Trial and error that incrementally rewards the player for learning how the game ticks. Bit by bit, the player can feel accomplished as they grow alongside their in-game characters. But the way this trial and error gameplay was implemented into Pale Luna would understandably cause most that play the game to quickly pass on it. Imagine struggling through the rat-infested sewers of Dark Souls, barely scraping by with pixels of health left and no healing items. You climb a staircase and see a spot to rest and heal in the distance, when suddenly, you're killed by an enemy you couldn't have known was there on your first run. This foe catches you off guard and drops what little health you had down to zero. Instead of seeing the words, "You died," appear in red text on the screen, your console completely freezes up, forcing you to turn it off and back on. Imagine this happened with every single death. Every time Mario touched a Goomba, reset. Every time your Final Fantasy party was wiped out, reset. It would be understandable that the frustration of real-world action needing to be taken just to play the game would cause anyone to drop it. Within Pale Luna, when presented with the choice of direction upon leaving the room, if the player were to choose any direction other than the one right answer, the system would freeze up, forcing the user to reboot their PC. This meant you would have to turn your PC off, wait for it to boot up and load everything, before trying to access the game again. It's worth mentioning, this was back when computers were still rather young, and turning a computer on would take several minutes. All that time to take another stab at Pale Luna, with the possibility of freezing your system faster than it took to start up again. Even if the player was to guess the correct direction when exiting the room, they would be faced with another screen repeating the same prompts. Reap your reward. Pale Luna smiles at you. You are in a forest. There are paths to the north, west, and east. Now, with most text adventure games, the player has more freedom with how they interact with the options before them. Even if all they get for their efforts are a few lines of world building or dialogue, it's still worth exploring. With this screen in Pale Luna, much like the first screen, the player is limited to what they are able to do, with only the movement commands being accessible, as well as the ability to attempt using the items that were gathered in the room. When attempting to use the shovel, the player is told, "Not now." When attempting to use the gold, the player is told, "Not here." Perhaps most bizarrely, When the player tries to use the rope, the game informs you that you've already used this. This means that, realistically, the only option the player has is to try guessing the right direction. Screen after screen popping up demanding a new direction be chosen. Each progress to the north, west, or east possibly being met by whirring clicks and frozen screens. Due to the buggy nature and unintuitive design, most players ejected the floppy disk, allowing it to rest in a waste bin where it would be forgotten. If there's one thing that we've learned during our time together here on the dark side of gaming, though, it's that there will always be someone. There will always be at least one person willing to go through the effort to crack the shell open to find what was hiding within. Whether it's speedrunners looking for the best route, or people just data mining, secrets are revealed. Even the broken mess that Pale Luna was didn't dissuade this fate. An individual by the name of Michael Nevins sat in front of his PC with the determination to see through with something no one else was willing to do, beating Pale Luna. One wrong direction after another, reboot after reboot, minutes spent watching black screens, waiting for them to hum back to life. Over and over and over, Michael learned which paths to take in which sequence. Hours went by as he learned through trial and error how to navigate the maze of Pale Luna. 5 hours passed with over 30 required resets from his PC before he was finally able to see new lines of text scrolling across the screen. Text just as enigmatic and uncertain as the rest of the game had been. Pale Luna smiles wide. There are no paths. Pale Luna smiles wide. The ground is soft. Pale Luna smiles wide. Here. The entity of Pale Luna practically salivating at the opportunity to finally see someone unearth its secrets. The player isn't able to move on from this screen as motion commands aren't recognized. It took Michael another hour of trying various commands of sequences before he was able to make the game move anything further. The sequence of commands he entered to make the game progress were dig hole, drop gold, and finally, fill hole. This meant that both the shovel and the gold within the gamer's inventory had finally served their purpose. With this set of commands entered, the game switches its screen one final time to congratulate the player, and to give Michael his reward for all the effort he put in wading through the murky programming, a set of numbers. 40.24248 and 121.4434. Once the game displayed this screen, fittingly, or perhaps poetically, the user's PC would lock up again, requiring one final reboot to escape the smile of Pale Luna. With how messy Pale Luna was and how poorly it functioned, it could almost be assumed the numbers listed were nothing more than a faulty line of text. Another dead end. Though Michael had come too far not to see the story to its end, and with enough time, he discovered the numbers were actually coordinates. When entering these coordinates, one set representing longitude, the other latitude, Michael discovered that they led to Lassen Volcanic Park. As this place was close, Michael was determined to go to the coordinates. Plenty of games had been made in our world that promise real-life rewards upon completion. The first game to do so was Pymania. Another text adventure game released in 1982 offered a golden sundial worth 6,000 euros to any player that could decipher its cryptic clues. The sundial was actually claimed 3 years later from a pair that discovered the dial would only be claimable from its hiding spot one day out of the year. While Pymania was the first, many were to follow, most of which were older games created in the same era alongside when Pale Luna would have been released. So, given the coordinates earned traversing and finishing the punishing game and even the mention of gold within the game, it would be marginally reasonable to assume that there would be a genuine reward awaiting whoever saw the journey through. And given how difficult Pale Luna was to even play, let alone beat, Michael had a good chance of being the first. Michael set out to the listed location, a hike that took him along the twisting park path each time turning in the same manner that he had within Pale Luna. The long and exhausting road finally led him to a patch of dirt that had been previously disturbed. And just as he had in Pale Luna, Michael grabbed the shovel he brought with him and began to pull the loose dirt free. However, the treasures that awaited him were unlike what those who participated in other treasure hunts led by games would find. Instead of a chest, or sundial, or even the gold that he himself had buried within Pale Luna, Michael found the grisly and abhorrent sight of a small, decomposing skull, strands of stray blonde hair still clinging to the rot. Understandably taken aback, Michael swiftly reported the situation to the police, who would go on to determine the skull belonged to an 11-year-old Karen Paulson, who had been missing for a year and a half. That's, unfortunately, where the story of Pale Luna and even Michael, the man who braved the twisting path, come to a close. Attempts were made to find who programmed Pale Luna, but given the haphazard social nature of how a game like that circulates, it was impossible to find a source. Much like the game itself, every direction seemed to lead to a dead end. Collectors have been known to offer a pretty penny for the game, but much like the rest of Karen Paulson's body, it was never found again. One detail seems to be missing from the game entirely. That was the inclusion of the rope mentioned within the room you start in sitting with the shovel. The player is unable to do anything with the rope, being told that you already used it, despite it being impossible in the game to do so. Is it possible Pale Luna was meant to mirror the actions taken by the individual who murdered Karen? That the rope within the room was already used to tie up the body of the 11-year-old girl? Or was there another sequence hidden in the game, a time or place that the player could appropriately use the rope to get more text, more information? Pale Luna is a long-gone artifact, the frayed ends of its rope never to be unwound. While the story of Pale Luna, Michael, and Karen might have all been a piece of fiction, crafted and posted to Creepypasta where it sits among a torrent of other horrors, some we've talked about before, it isn't too far-fetched to imagine a world where Pale Luna's smile did reach the drives of old and obsolete computers. Developers sneak codes and Easter eggs into games all the time. Thousands upon thousands of games have existed. These games often have entire teams working on them behind the scenes, building worlds and creating lines of text. Would it be so outlandish to think that one person out there, somewhere, toiling away at a game, that someone would sneak something as devious and enigmatic as the coordinates for a heinous crime they had a hand in? Video games reenact depictions of violence, gambling, and any other crime you could imagine. Though it's all displayed through fiction, it's entirely possible that within such fiction lies a truth. There are games you've never heard of. Games that are being developed in basements by one person. Titles the world may never see or take note of, resting in program files long forgotten. Plenty of sites are now dedicated to gaming content that is all user-uploaded, crafted by people and teams just trying to get their game out to the public. Would it be impossible that something sinister could be out there, waiting? Like when an app called Randonautica got people out and about. The app would give random coordinates that claimed to be influenced by the user's energy and desires. This eventually led a group of teens to a black suitcase resting among the rocks underneath a pier. And, like Michael did with Pale Luna, when they opened the suitcase, they found the contents contained a body. What if someone behind the scenes of the app planted those coordinates in hopes that someone would discover the tragedy? Or that any body found in any of the countless emerging open-world games would correspond with a body found in its real-life counterpart? The story of Pale Luna is one of persistence and foreboding. Stories that end without answers often leave us walking down winding paths to try and make sense of the information given to us, no matter how little there is of it. But, as stated earlier, there will always be someone. Someone willing to crack through the code and break the game apart to find out what it's trying to hide. Whether it's the contents of the newest AAA title or a floppy disk handed from person to person so often, the source becomes just as enigmatic as the contents of the game. There will be people who desire to know why Pale Luna smiles wide. This episode of The Dark Side of Gaming was brought to you by The Dark Swamp Entertainment and produced by Swamp Dweller, backed by Audio Boom. The heart-pounding sound design was produced by Joey Surlis, and the creepy mysteries in this episode were brought together by author JoJo. These dark tales were voiced and hosted by Derek Weber. Be sure to follow the podcast on iTunes and Spotify to get notified as soon as a new episode comes out. And don't forget to rate it to let us know how we did, and leave a comment on what you would like to hear be covered in a future episode.